Welcome to today's deep dive. We have a really fascinating collection of documents to explore today.
We really do.
Yeah, we're looking at something called the Polyocto Codex.
Right, which the sources also call the Personal Operating System, or the POS.
Exactly, the POS. So our mission for this session is to kind of distill this huge stack of primary materials, these internal guides and blueprints, because, I mean, it's a highly complex, almost mechanical framework for how to live.
It is. It's very structured.
But the ultimate goal of the entire codex is actually super relatable. It's designed for one specific purpose, and that is helping you reclaim your personal agency in a world that, constantly tries to just quietly strip it away.
Strip it away. Yeah, that's the perfect way to phrase it.
Right. And to get us into the right mindset for this, I want you, the listener, to picture something for a second. Let's say you go out, you work really hard, and you buy a piece of property, like, say, a heavy-duty truck.
Okay, a big investment.
Massive. You hold the keys, you're paying for the fuel, you are literally the one sitting in the driver's seat. But then you're driving down the highway, and suddenly this little DEF sensor on your dashboard lights up.
Oh man, yeah. The dreaded sensor.
Right. And for anyone who isn't a mechanic, DEF is diesel exhaust fluid. It's part of the modern emission system. Now, if the computer decides there's an issue with, public emission standards, that digital gatekeeper literally shuts down your engine.
Just kills it completely.
Kills it.
Yeah.
And it does this in the name of a public policy that you never actively signed a contract for. So it turns this private asset that you supposedly own into a 2-ton stationary weight on the side of the road. So the question is, have you ever felt like a mere passenger in a vehicle you supposedly own?
I mean, that truck scenario,
Yeah.
which is actually straight from the text, it is the perfect metaphor for this deeply frustrating and honestly increasingly common modern experience.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you've done everything right,
Yeah.
you acquired the asset, and yet you are endlessly asking and usually paying for permission to actually use it.
It's crazy when you put it like that.
It really is. And the sources have a very specific term for this whole phenomenon. They call it the drift.
The drift, which, I mean, it sounds kind of ominous, but also very passive.
Well, passive is the key word here. The drift is defined as this quiet state where you unconsciously exchange your inherent privacy and your freedom for what the text calls user agreements.
Right. And we aren't just talking about like clicking agree on software terms of service.
No, it's way bigger than that. Those software is part of it. It's an entire mindset. You basically get relegated to a secondary, compliant role in your own life's script.
Like an NPC in your own game.
Exactly. The
Yeah.
individual gets completely lost in the machinery of society, and usually they don't even realize a trade was made.
Just drifting along, signing on the dotted line, accepting the sensors that shut down our own engines.
Right. But the Codex pushes back against this with what it calls an absolute truth. It's the idea that all time is free time.
All time is free time. I love that. Meaning your time inherently belongs to you before anybody else gets to lay a claim to it.
Yes, exactly. And the foundational solution to actually combating the drift, it starts with a quote they pull from the entrepreneur Jim Rohn.
Oh, the golden rule.
Yeah, the golden rule, which is work harder on yourself than you do on your job.
Work harder on yourself than you do on your job. That is so profound.
Taking that seriously is step one out of the drift. Because if you fail to maintain your internal self, what the Codex calls the pilot, then the external roles you play will eventually take over and control you.
Right. Your job, your obligations, all those administrative headaches, they become the master. Okay, let's unpack this. If we really want to fight the drift, we have to understand the anatomy of this codex, right? Which starts with mapping out who we actually are versus what we just happen to do.
And the text uses a really brilliant, if a little unexpected, structural model to do this.
Yeah, it brings us to the first of three main organic archetypes. And this explains why it's called the Polyocto Codex. It starts with the octopus.
Right. Biologically, it's such a fascinating choice for a model. Because in this archetype, you have the central brain and you have the eight arms.
Okay.
So the central brain represents the pilot. This is your pure internal intent, your human agency, your absolute core value.
No non-negotiables.
Exactly. And the eight arms, on the other hand,
Yep.
those represent the temporary specialized roles or, personas that you deploy out into the physical world to actually get things done.
Okay, I picture it kind of like an actor playing a character on a stage.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, like the actor themselves, with their own life and morals and family. That's the pilot, the brain. But the character they're playing, let's say a manager at a company or a technician or even like a community volunteer, that's the arm.
Right.
And the danger, and I guess what triggers the drift, is when the actor forgets who they are offstage, when the character just permanently takes over their entire identity.
And the source material actually issues a really strict warning about this exact dynamic. It says, the arm serves the brain. The brain never serves the arm.
The brain never serves the arm.
Never. You are the principal. The roles you play, the jobs you take, those are just secondary instruments. I mean, an octopus can literally regrow an arm if it has to,
Right.
but it cannot regrow its brain.
Wow. So how do we actually protect the brain then? Because the text outlines what it calls an internal value sequence for the pilot, made up of four pillars, and the order of these pillars seems to be like a matter of life and death in this framework.
The sequence is deliberately hierarchical. You cannot mess with the order. Number one is health. Number two is freedom. Number three is finances. And number four is relationships.
With health being the absolute primary anchor.
The text is entirely unapologetic about this. It states plainly, without health, there is no flight.
Makes sense.
Yeah, if your physical vitality and your nervous system aren't regulated, you simply cannot direct your life with any agency. You just become reactive to everything.
So securing your health gives you the actual biological capacity to secure your freedom.
Right, which the Codex defines as your autonomy and your private boundaries.
And then I guess once you have that freedom, you can manage your finances, your resource fuel, without having to compromise your honor to get it.
Exactly. And only when those first three are secure can you truly engage in healthy relationships and community parity.
It makes total logical sense. But you know, I did notice a really fascinating exception to this strict sequence in the text.
Yes, the fiduciary exception.
Right.
Because the Codex acknowledges that sometimes the deployed arm actually requires a different operating logic than the brain. So while health is almost always number one for the pilot internally, the text notes what happens when you deploy an arm for a fiduciary trade role.
And let's quickly define fiduciary here, because I think most people usually associate that with like wealth managers or Wall Street bankers.
Sure, but the text applies it much more broadly. A fiduciary is basically anyone who is legally or ethically bound to act in someone else's best interest. So the Codex uses this example of an HVAC service called Add More Comfort.
Okay.
When you step into that specific suit of armor to provide a crucial physical service to someone else, like, say, fixing their heating in the middle of a freezing winter, relationships temporarily moves to position number one for that specific arm.
Ma, because in that deployed role, relational trust and fiduciary care literally have to take precedence over your own immediate comfort.
Exactly.
Because otherwise, it's just a transactional corporate extraction. You're taking on the responsibility of a client's environment. But I think the key mechanism here is that it's strictly temporary, right?
Yes, temporary is the operative word.
When the HVAC job is done, you take off that deployed arm, you clock out, and health immediately returns to the number one slot for your internal pilot.
You put on a functional suit to provide stewardship, but it does not permanently overwrite your internal sequence. If you let the client's demands override your personal health pillar permanently, well, you've slipped right back into the drift.
Right. Okay, so assuming the central brain is calibrated and we are fiercely protecting our health and freedom pillars, how does the pilot actually interact with the rest of the world?
Because you can't just isolate yourself.
Exactly. We can't just sit in a dark room protecting our internal values. We have to actually exist in society.
Which requires a system for both internal growth and external connection. And the Codex handles this with the next two archetypes, the parrot and the peacock.
Okay, so if the octopus is about execution and roles, the parrot is about replication.
Right. The logic in the text is called navigating by the blueprint. Basically, you don't need to constantly reinvent the wheel when it comes to personal growth.
The parrot archetype is entirely focused on self-mastery through repetition, though.
Yes. The text mentions using these specific tools called POW forms in what it calls an academy setting.
And POW here stands for proof of work, right?
Yes, proof of work. It's borrowing a bit of ledger terminology, but applying it to personal integrity. These forms act as private inputs for the pilot.
So it's about doing the quiet internal reps. You're tracking your daily actions against those four pillars to ensure you are actually living in honor and not just theorizing about it on a podcast.
Exactly. But doing the private work only gets you so far.
Right.
Eventually, you have to output a signal to the world. And that brings us to the third archetype, the peacock.
The peacock. Okay, so the codex says this focuses on attraction and community, which is achieved by posting POW entries in a community forum called The Roost.
This represents the big transition from your private internal calibration to actually engaging with a broader flock in the external world.
Okay, so what does this all mean? Because I've got to be honest, I really stumbled on this term in the text.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I am going to push back on using the peacock as a model for authentic connection. Because in everyday conversation, peacocking implies vanity.
Right, showing off.
Yeah, it means you are putting on a performance, strutting around trying to look bigger or wealthier or smarter than you actually are. It sounds like the exact opposite of pure internal intent. So why use a symbol of arrogance?
What's fascinating here is that the pushback makes total sense socially, but the text asks us to look at the actual biology of a peacock rather than the slang definition we all use.
Okay.
In the polyocto framework, the peacock represents an unfiltered signal. Think about the biological reality of those feathers. A bird cannot fake that plumage.
Oh, I see.
It takes massive metabolic energy, profound health, and real genetic integrity to grow that display. It is honest signaling.
Ah, so it's not a trick. You aren't putting on a fake suit to deceive anyone.
Not at all. Broadcasting in the roost is simply signaling your authentic, earned standing based on the proof of work you've already done as the parrot. The text explicitly warns against salesmanship or corporate networking or any kind of social performance. It is just a beacon.
Okay, I can actually see that now. It's more like a lighthouse than a billboard.
Oh, that's good.
Because a billboard is trying to convince you to buy something you don't even need. A lighthouse isn't selling anything. It's just standing there, burning its own fuel, letting you know exactly where the rocks are and where the safe harbor is.
That is a brilliant distinction. And the goal of that unfiltered lighthouse signal is natural gravitation.
Right.
By broadcasting exactly who you are, like your actual values and your actual capabilities, you naturally attract people who share that frequency without ever having to convince them.
And the codex categorizes these connections into specific tiers, doesn't it?
It does. So tier one are your flock mates. Mm. These are high vibration peers operating in total shared values and parity, migrating in the exact same direction as you.
And then there's tier two, which the text calls same tree kin. These are people who share common ground, maybe a common trade or a neighborhood, operating in mutual respect, even if you aren't flying in the exact same formation for your whole lives.
Exactly. And the crucial takeaway is that you can only find those tier one and tier two connections if you are broadcasting a true signal. If you mask who you are to try and fit in, if you let your deployed arm act like a billboard, you will attract a flock that expects you to maintain that fake performance forever.
Which sounds completely exhausting.
It really is.
But if we ditch traditional networking and we are successfully broadcasting our true frequency, how do we actually measure success in this system? Because the codex seems to completely throw out traditional corporate metrics.
It dismantles them entirely. It replaces the traditional corporate ladder and, you know, the bank account obsession with a concept called the personal ledger.
The personal ledger?
Yes. In this operational framework, true value is not measured solely by fiat currency or how many external assets you own. True value is measured by energy parity, protected time, and the stewardship of your core nervous system.
Energy parity, that is such a striking term. How does the ledger practically track something as abstract as energy?
By categorizing your life into strict energy inflows and energy outflows. So energy inflows are the activities, environments, and relationships that restore your nervous system and feed your central brain. Like a walk in the woods, deep study, or spending time with a tier one flock mate.
And the outflows?
Energy outflows, which the text actually frequently refers to as leaks, are the demands that force you to mask your true self, or that drain your vitality without offering a proportional return.
So let's apply this to a real world scenario.
Yeah.
Say you are offered a job that pays just a massive amount of fiat money, but the culture of the company requires you to constantly check your phone at dinner, work weekends, and essentially compromise your freedom and health pillars.
Right.
According to this framework, the personal ledger would view that job as a deep deficit, a massive energy leak, completely regardless of how big the paycheck is.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because you are giving away your irreplaceable life force in an unreciprocated exchange. The ledger is essentially a tool to rigorously monitor your capacity limits. It forces you to continually ask, how much bandwidth am I allocating to these active trade roles before my internal pilot sequence starts to degrade?
Here's where it gets really interesting. This perspective on energy parity completely changes how the Codex views skills and qualifications.
It really does.
Because the text introduces a concept called the Knowledge and Qualifications Vault.
The Vault is basically a central repository for all your accumulated knowledge, your crafts, and your problem-solving capabilities.
Mm.
But it emphasizes honoring the pilot's polymathic nature.
Polymathic, meaning you have capabilities that span multiple, seemingly unrelated disciplines. Like, you aren't just one thing.
Right, because modern society loves to reduce human beings to a single, easily digestible job title. You are a mechanic.
Yep.
Or you are a musician. Or an accountant.
He's in a box.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But human capability is incredibly vast. The Vault treats your certificates and degrees, whether that's a certification in building diagnostics, a license for HVAC, or a degree in acoustic systems, not as your core identity, but simply as validation records. They are just receipts of your underlying mastery.
And the mechanism the text demands before you use one of those receipts is called the energy audit. So let's say I'm looking at my ledger right now, and I have a qualification in my vault I could use to make some extra money today. How do I actually execute this audit?
You map the potential deployed arm against your four pillars. You literally have to stop and ask, if I activate this specific capability today, am I honoring all facets of my intent, or am I suppressing parts of myself just to fit the client's job description?
Wow.
And more importantly, is deploying this arm going to draw energy away from my central brain?
So that energy audit is essentially the emergency brake that keeps you out of the drift?
Exactly.
Because you might be incredibly skilled at a certain trade, and you have the physical certificate in your vault to prove it. But if deploying that specific arm today throws your fare exchange out of parity and drains your health pillar, the pilot has to have the discipline to just say no.
The ability to withhold your capabilities when the exchange lacks parity is the ultimate expression of the pilot's agency.
I love that. But let's ground this in reality for a second. We've been talking a lot about voluntary choices. You know, you can say no to a bad job offer to protect your energy.
Right.
But what happens when the external world forces itself on you? Because you can't just ignore the utility company if you want the lights on. You can't ignore a software license agreement if you absolutely need the tool for your trade. You certainly can't ignore taxes or municipal notices.
No, you can't.
So how does the pilot handle involuntary compliance without surrendering their agency?
This is where the rubber really meets the road for the Codex. It provides a very specific cognitive and practical tool for this called directional logic. And that operates via what they term the axiologic compass.
Directional logic. Unpack how that compass actually works.
It's basically a filtering mechanism for evaluating the origin of every single external demand. So when a demand comes in, the compass asks, is this action originating from voluntary choice and authentic alignment, meaning it serves my health, freedom, finances, and relationships? Or is this action being driven by external noise, statutory demands, and the reactive habits of society?
But again, sometimes you have to engage with the statutory demands. Like, if I need the proprietary diagnostic software to fix a modern engine, I have to click I agree on a 50-page end user license agreement. I don't get to negotiate those terms.
Right. And the Codex is not naive. It recognizes operational necessity. It does not advocate for, like, going off the grid, living in the woods, and disconnecting from all modern infrastructure.
Okay, good.
Instead, it introduces a containment strategy within the vault, specifically called adhesion storage.
Adhesion contracts, which, for anyone unfamiliar, those are the take-it-or-leave-it agreements. You have zero bargaining power. It's the software terms of service, the commercial lease, the municipal zoning code.
Exactly. So the vault acts as a designated containment zone, specifically for these mandatory administrative records and third-party utility contracts.
You know, when I was reading this section, I immediately pictured a biohazard glove box.
A glove box?
You know, like, you are a scientist working with a dangerous, highly infectious material. You need to handle it to do your work in the physical world, but you obviously don't rub it on your skin. You put your hands into those thick rubber gloves attached to the sealed glass box. You manipulate the material inside the box, but you keep a hard, impenetrable pane of glass between it and your physical body. That's what adhesion storage feels like. But is it a literal filing cabinet, or is it a mental framework?
It is both, actually. It is a physical place where you file these documents and a cognitive boundary you maintain. You handle these adhesion contracts because you have to, but by isolating them in this administrative quarantine, you prevent them from affecting your private standing or your core values.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's just a massive psychological relief. It creates a hard operational boundary.
Yes, it really does.
You can check a box that says, yes, I recognize this is an external operational necessity. I am filing it in the quarantine box. But doing so explicitly prevents that contract from defining your moral duty or your internal autonomy.
Exactly.
You are participating in the external necessities of the modern world without ever psychologically surrendering to them.
It keeps the public script completely separate from your private story.
Which brings us right back to our opening hook. When the D2F sensor shuts down your truck on the side of the highway, it's an adhesion issue.
Yes.
It is incredibly frustrating. It is a huge operational hurdle, and it costs you time and money. But it doesn't mean your pilot is broken. It just means a statutory arm of society reached into your life. You deal with the administrative friction out of the vault, you get the sensor fixed, or you file the paperwork, but your central brain, your fundamental agency, remains totally untouched.
The vehicle stopped, but you remain the principal of your own mind.
We have covered tremendous ground today. We've decoded the absolute core of the Polyocto Codex. We've talked about the biological necessity of keeping the pilot, that central brain in charge of the eight arms, ensuring that the roles you play never consume your actual identity.
Right, and we looked at how to track true energy parity on your personal ledger, rather than just chasing fiat money, to ensure you aren't leaking your vitality.
We explored the biology of the peacock, broadcasting your unfiltered signal to naturally attract your true flock without the utter exhaustion of social performance.
And finally, we discussed using adhesion storage like a biohazard box, quarantining all that administrative noise so it doesn't compromise your autonomy.
So I want to turn this directly to you listening right now. Take a hard look at your own personal ledger today. Look at the arms you have deployed in your life, your job title, your family obligations, the community personas you wear. Are those roles actually feeding your central brain? Are they supporting your health and your freedom? Or are they quietly dragging you into the drift?
Are you leaking irreplaceable energy just to meet a statutory demand you never actually agreed to?
Running an honest energy audit on your own life is perhaps the most profound thing you can do with this material.
Absolutely.
And as you run that audit, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, drawn from the text's deeply nuanced section on relational nodes. Earlier, we talked about Tier 1 and Tier 2 flock members, the people who share your values and respect your lighthouse frequency. But the text also mentions a Tier 3. It calls them different skies.
This is such a beautiful concept. These are individuals who are navigating completely divergent paths from yours. They don't share your frequency, and they don't share your destination.
Right. And the Codex says you should recognize these people with peace. There's no need for conflict. But it warns that engaging with them requires you to establish clear, private boundaries. And the text describes these boundaries as suits of armor.
Functional tools deployed solely for interaction, rather than open, vulnerable alignment.
Exactly. Yeah. So think about who in your life requires you to put on that functional suit of armor just to interact with them without losing your energy. And when you identify them, ask yourself a hard question. Is engaging with them a conscious, temporary choice made by your pilot serving a specific purpose? Or is wearing that heavy armor around them every single day just another symptom of the drift, weighing you down without you even realizing it? Mm-hmm. You own the vehicle of your life. It is time to make sure you are the one actually holding the keys.